Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Season 10 wrap-up of Setting the Tone, an ER Retrospective. My name is Elizabeth, and joining me today, as always, are Lauren.
Hello.
And Daniel.
Hey.
And also joining us today as our Master of Ceremonies for the 10th Semi-Annual Tony Awards, please welcome the living meme himself, Jake, of the Popular Court.
Oh, hey, how are ya?
I rest my case. So, Daniel, you want to kick us off by running us through some season stats?
Oh, sure. What a long, strange trip this whole season has been. The 10th full season we've covered, and certainly the most arduous. Starting, as we always do, with our viewership, we took another slight dip this season. We lost about 3 million viewers on balance from season 9, and actually it's probably a little more than that because the average number here is propped up quite a bit by the Friends finale night, which garnered them an extra like 7 or 8 million over what they had been usually getting. So our average for the season is 21.5, but if you took out that one episode where they had about 28.5 million tuning in, this probably drops down to around 20 million or maybe even dipping into 19. So
thanks, Friends finale.
Yeah, the precipitous decline as prestige television starts to ramp up, as cable television continues its rise, and the number of options that are out there just continues to grow. The overall kind of monoculture is shrinking beneath our feet. But we're still holding strong, 21.5 million. As for number of twinkles, we checked in with just a paltry 2 this season.
Where are the twinkles we were promised in the later seasons? What the hell?
Yeah, it's we're rapidly running out of time, gang. We only have 2 seasons left with the theme song.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I was like, wait, no, we don't have 2 seasons left of this show.
We have
You're
two,
right.
We have,
God damn it. I forgot about that.
We have 2 seasons left with the theme song. So we have season 11 and season 12. And then once we start season 13, that's when the change comes.
Do they ever explain why they change up the theme? It just seems so arbitrary, like season 13.
To allow for more time for like commercials in the actual show.
Yeah.
If you cut out that like 30 seconds or whatever, you can add either more show time or commercial.
Yeah. It was effectively like, it was, you really can't even call what they replace it with a theme. It's more just, it's a title card with a little like stinger sound. Like,
yeah, it's just bum.
It's
bum,
kind
bum,
of
bum.
Like the Law and Order. Bum, bum.
Yeah. It's very unsatisfying. It's not at all. No one likes it. I don't know anyone who prefers the season 13 and beyond version of the intro. But that was the impetus for it, was that the advertisers basically demanded more airtime, and it was a choice between you can either cut the theme or you can cut time from the episode. So, yeah. So, yeah, 2 twinkles this season. And you're right, it has been very eye-opening and illuminating as we've gone through 10 full seasons now to realize what a rare treat that is to get to have an episode that starts with the softer version of the intro. And it's not always consistent either. Like, it's not always like one kind of episode that warrants twinkles. Sometimes they just decide to throw it in there for fun, just even though it doesn't necessarily make sense. And then getting into the previously on ER counts, a very unbalanced season here, very Carter heavy, as he leads the way with 7 previously on ERs, which if you're keeping score at home, that's like a full third of the season, basically, that he's doing the previously on ER for, which is funny considering he was absent for about a third of the season as well.
So I just got to remind you, he's still the main character.
Right. They had to find the way to squeeze him in there somehow. In second place, distant second, is Pratt with 3. And then we have a 3-way tie for third place with Abby, Romano, and Carrie all checking in with 2 apiece. And then bringing up the rear, we have a 4-way tie. Susan, Corday, Neela, and Sam all getting a single episode apiece. Notable absences from the previously on segment this season include Chen, Luca, and Gallant, all checking in with a big fat donut hole for previously.
What do you mean Archie didn't get any this season? What the hell?
Archie's still not part of the main cast yet. He's still.
I know.
He's a recurring.
They
character.
Didn't know he was going to be part of the main cast till like 2/3 right. of the way through the season.
Exactly. He was supposed to die in Freefall. So. yeah, I believe he officially joins the cast with season 11. So we'll start seeing him get sprinkled in next season. But yeah, that is it for the season stats.
I will go ahead and do the award shows, if everybody's cool with that.
Sure.
We had the 2004 Primetime Emmys. Chris Chulock, The Lost, Outstanding Directing in a Drama Series. He was nominated. This was Sopranos, Angels in America, Sex and the City led the way in nominations. So again, like Daniel said, Prestige Television is continuing to override ER's, you know, Golden Child early years streak. Mm-hmm. And then 2004 Golden Globes was a shutout because, again, Angels in America, Sex and the City, Will and Grace led the way in nominations there. So, again, not a good year for them.
I'd never even heard of, like, Angels in America or don't know what that is. And I
think that's
it
an
up.
HBO.
Al Pacino, Meryl Streep, Emma Thompson, Jeffrey Wright, Mary Louise Parker. Shit. That cash.
Yeah.
Lauren, since you weren't with us for the season finale, I wanted to get your thoughts on the end of Frasier, because we covered that night. The night of the season finale was the series finale, at least at that time, for Frasier. So,
yeah, because I did my rewatch, what, a year ago, 2 years ago now?
Something like that.
It was last year.
It was, now I can't even remember how it ended. Jesus. But overall, like, Frasier was a really solid installation for that time. Like, I think it was a great addition to that lineup. I will be sad to see that we're not getting any, you know, airing same night kind of things anymore for it, because it was an institution of that time, just like you see Friends peter out. Like, mm-hmm. we're starting to see ER outpace all these, you know, I'll say great sitcoms, for lack of a better term. It's already killed Seinfeld, Friends, and now Frasier. So be curious to see Will and Grace come up next on that. But yeah. Highly recommend to anybody who enjoyed Frasier back when it was on to give it a rewatch. It held up pretty well.
The listeners reminded me what will be taking over the Friends time slot for at least the next season or so, and I had completely scrubbed it from my memory. Failed spinoffs, baby. We will get into that with the season 11 premiere.
All right. So let's get into some characters we actually said goodbye to. I mean, are we sure? Oh, yeah, I suppose, yeah, these people got fired.
Yeah, so it is a very blurry line between...
Tenuous.
It is a tenuous, blurry line between goodbye and Bob this season, I will just say that. There's a lot of stuff that it's like, you could make the argument absolutely that any one of these goodbyes, barring a few, are also Bob's. But again, it also toes that line between, like, who's a recurring character and who's just a guest star and that sort of thing. So, you know. We'll go through it go through one at a time here and kind of plead our case.
All right, so we're gonna kick off. Remember that whole like protest walkout thing we had early in the season? Remember the labor rights movement of the nurses early this season? Well, its victims included Yosh, wave bye to Yosh, Connie, and Lydia, kinda.
Yeah,
because we find out she comes back from the Shadow Realm much later on. Yeah. Isn't that all the way in season 15?
It is. Mm-hmm. It is all the way in season. It is the series finale.
The series finale. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Lydia, just a little cameo.
Lydia returns for a brief cameo in the series finale and tells us that she's been on night shift this whole time, and that's why we haven't seen her, which is cute. I mean, I give them points for even, you know, thinking to do that, but it is effectively us saying goodbye to, in Connie and Lydia's case, two nurses that have been with us since the very beginning. And in Yosh's case, a very beloved addition to the nursing corps about halfway through the show. It's just a further, like, culling of the background cast. Like, they really did, at this time, kind of try to streamline things towards the main cast and focus more on their storylines and what they're doing, and a lot less on kind of the just day-to-day background stuff.
Give me that world-building background stuff.
It does feel like we were trading off, and I don't always love that. I don't always notice it either, though. You know, like, I can't say there were a ton of times this season where I was like, man, I really wish I was seeing what Connie was doing right now instead of,
see,
you know.
I find that, you know, having them in there, it really helps things breathe a little bit more. Which might be why they got rid of it, was because, like, then they can pack more into an episode. But I found usually having the little interstitial comments by the nurses or whatever helped kind of pace things a little bit better.
Sure. See, whereas I think they did this partially because they wanted to focus Sam so much that it kind of didn't really leave time for other nurses.
Sure.
Necessarily. Like, even in the background, which doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, but I could see why they would want to trim that background cast down.
Yeah. I mean, they've always had a principal nurse character. I mean, it goes from Carol to Abby, you know, on to Sam eventually. So, I mean, they've always had that one part of the principal cast that is representing the nurses. And in the early days, they did find a way to, like, balance it out between principal and secondary. But, you know, just as an overall trend, definitely, the trend has been leaning more towards drama and less towards just day-to-day slice-of-life type material. And so that doesn't always really lend itself to a lot of well-developed, you know, well-known background characters. You kind of just start treating them as set dressing, which is essentially what they are. But the show was always good about not letting you in on that early on. Like, they were always good about, like, no, these are real people. They're just not necessarily our main characters, and they do have their own lives and they do have their own opinions. And you just see less and less of that as the show goes on.
All right, and the first of the hot doctors, Dr. Dorsett, that Lizzie dated this season, Lizzie Corday, not me, unfortunately.
She managed to fit two different fuckboy storylines into one season.
And one nice gentleman dating storyline.
Neither of which were particularly interesting or satisfying. It's just really a quite an accomplishment that she managed.
But again, it's how Lizzie Corday got her groove back.
Yeah, at least this one was married, so it gave a reason for him to just evaporate into the shadow realm.
Yeah, though this one.
No, this is the married one.
This is the married one.
So this one was married, so that gave us a good reason to say goodbye to him.
Yeah,
but you said it wasn't.
So yeah, this one, like I said, toes the line because there's not an official, like, hey, we'll not be seeing this character anymore stamp on this. But I felt it was like sufficient enough of an explanation of, like, he got caught, you know, with his hand in the cookie jar and, you know,
peaced.
has a wife, has, you know, like, so there was a, I felt like there was enough there to warrant kind of his very tertiary status as a character getting a good
point. This gave us the great car sex scene.
True.
So
that's true.
We will allow him a pass.
The Lizzie Corday.
Yeah, I was say, with the shaman, Corday has literally never been hotter.
The Lizzie Corday, I'm sorry, I wasn't familiar with your game scene.
Excuse you, peak hotness was her peeling that damn egg in front of Benton. Thank you very much.
Yeah, but that was like that one game where Jordan decided to shoot all his free throws left-handed just to prove he could do it. Like,
yeah.
That was just her fucking around. That was just her being like, I'm going to do something really weird and make it hot. So, you know, kudos to Corday. Never has someone done so much while simultaneously doing so little as she's done this season.
Yeah. And our most definitive goodbye, Helicopter 2, Romano 0. Romano in a fiery death storm of a helicopter.
Goes out in a blaze of irony.
Say goodbye to him, and I don't know what that noise was that just came from my throat. In episode 8, we said goodbye to him. Sorry.
the quintessential definitive moment of the series for just about everyone. It's either the moment that you gave up on the show and you never watched again, or it was the moment that you were, you know, committing to sticking around the rest of the way and going, I guess this is just the new normal. And I think we figured out when we covered that episode, which there'll be plenty of free fall talk later in the episode, but the episode itself is way better than I remembered it being. Like, the episode itself, I've always had this thought that the moment itself and the way they write Romano out of the show is very silly, which it is. But I always kind of threw the baby out with the bathwater and was like, well, the moment's silly. That must mean the episode is, too.
No, it's a great Mass Casualty episode.
Right. As I discovered watching it back, I was like, this episode is actually really darn good. And like, yeah, the moment still kind of sucks, but it's not bad.
It gives an excellent highlight for the med students.
And especially that fake out with Chuck.
Yeah, yeah, really. They managed to, you know, weave quite a bit of drama into that. And yeah, there's just a lot to like about that entire episode, even if the moment, again, which I don't hate the idea on principle of, you know, yes, it's a little on the nose. Yes, it's a little bit of the Moby Dick thing. I think the big thing that holds it back is just the technology of the time and that it looks so shit in 2024. Like, it visually looks so terrible is the main reason why that is such a poorly received moment. I think if you had the benefit of better technology and you could make it look a little bit better, I think it would be kind of just this funny moment because, you know, he was always kind of a cartoonish character. It makes sense for him to go out in a cartoonish way.
I also think that if the show was more, had more CGI to begin with, like, I think it would maybe stand out a little less, but we're such heavy practical in this show, which is one of the main reasons I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they definitely start playing with CGI more as entertainment as a whole was doing around that time, early 2000s, late 90s, you know, like that was when CGI was this shiny new toy that everybody was getting to play with. And so they were doing that just like everyone else was. And it just, for the most part, it doesn't look good and it doesn't age well.
TV executives everywhere saw The Phantom Menace and were like, we could do that.
Yeah. Let's do only that from now on.
With like an eighth of the budget. That's fine. But not even an eighth. Like
a 20th.
An 80th of the budget. Right.
But Jake, you have been a vocal critic of both Romano as a character and Romano's exit pretty much since we've introduced you to the show. So I am very, very interested to hear your long-form thoughts on Romano's exit.
I mean, I'm sure we'll talk more about the episode when we actually get to. I'm sure Lizzie picked Free Fall for best episode of the season.
Hell yeah, I haven't looked that far in the notes yet.
So I'll save it for that. I didn't like the episode though. To no one's surprise that Lizzie and I are on opposite sides. But Romano, like, beginning to end, I don't know if I've ever been just so, like, disappointed or, like, unfulfilled with a character. Like, beginning to end, and y'all told me from the beginning there's not going to be a moment where you're like, here's the reason he's such a butthole. You know, there's no explanation for any of it. We get glimpses, very few glimpses here and there. And I know it's just the writers not wanting to kind of explore that at all. And I really love the actor. I mean, he is great. He understands his role perfectly. But I mean, by the end, like, what do I, like, as Danny said multiple times this season, like, who gives a shit? Like, it's just stupid. Like, like, people were upset. Like, more people weren't mourning him. I'm like, I didn't mourn him. I don't care. They're not doing anything with him anyways, and they're just going to fucking throw a helicopter at him again. I can't believe he got hit with a helicopter twice in a calendar year. It's ridiculous. And if they had given me any, like, give me more scenes with him and hanging out with his dog and, like, that's, like, his purpose for being because he went through some fucked up thing and, like, that's, like, give me any motivation and any reason to care about him. And they just don't. And so who gives a shit?
Yeah. I do sort of agree that they left a lot to be desired on the downfall thing side of things where, you know, like I really would have preferred a more drawn out and a more fully realized arc of him learning to love emergency medicine and learning to love being just a doctor and not a surgeon. Because I felt like he was a big part of why the first third or so of season 10 is as strong as it is. Like, I feel like he had a lot to offer and had a lot to bring to the table, and it all just kind of goes up in a puff of smoke in Free Fall. Like, it's just gone overnight. And I feel like the middle chunk of season 10 really suffers for him not being there and having losing that, you know, losing that presence really makes a makes for a big, big letdown once you get past Free Fall. And it's unfortunate because I think the first 8 episodes or so of season 10 are on par with one of the stronger stretches of, you know, post Clooney ER. Like once Clooney's gone, like that 8 episode stretch there, you could put up against any other, I think, 8 episode stretch from seasons, you know, 6, 7, 8, and certainly 9, because 9 is kind of whatever. But it's just, yeah, there was more to do. There was more to do with that. I would not have been mad if they'd have had him stick around through the end of season 10 or even into 11. Like, there's just no reason why he needed to go in the first third of the season and just that be that. Do love that meme though. Do love Carrie naming the LGBTQ center after him. That's get your t-shirt now.
It's my favorite bit in the entire series. Quite possibly. Anyway, moving on to much less discussion-worthy people. Valerie Gallant. We lost her in episode 11. Gallant has a hot sister. Yeah. Pratt fucks her.
With a mysteriously changing disability from the first time.
Wasn't it cerebral palsy and then MS? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, and I think her name changed too.
I really would have loved an outtake where Gallant is coming home and like the door opens to the bathroom and it's fucking Corday and she's just getting around. I really would have loved that, of just like Lizzie is getting it this season.
Lizzie's whole storyline this season is just about her getting it. Oh, yeah. The Gallant sisters, I guess I give them points for trying, you know, but like it's not even, it's a Gallant storyline in name only, really, because it's really more about Gallant's sister and Pratt than it is about Gallant himself, you know. And so,
yeah, I mean, if that's not indicative of just Gallant this season, like he's the bit player in his own story.
Right. Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Yeah. Moving on to other hot people, Jillian lost her in episode 16.
Yeah, another one that like could have,
after Luca realizes, oh no, he really has feelings for Sam.
Oh, Jillian's the French lady. I had to think about it.
Mm-hmm. The French doctor, right?
Yeah. And she follows Luca back to the States for a brief, you know,
just to have a nice little fuck before she goes back to her other boyfriend, which or husband, or whatever.
Which is a long way to go just for a booty call. Like,
a flight.
From,
yeah, I was gonna say,
Africa.
Have you seen Luca?
Ain't no mountain high enough, ain't no valley low enough to keep them from Luka Kovac. You know what I mean?
It's So I think it was a character, basically the one that I dubbed basically French Abby,
mm-hmm.
back at the beginning of the season.
Why weren't we calling her Frabby this entire time?
Because that's fucking hideous.
Yeah. Lauren would have missed more episodes if you'd have started doing that.
I would have developed all of this months earlier if you had started doing this.
Yeah. But yeah, I think she had more potential too. I think she gets kind of an unceremonious exit where they kind of forget about her for a while and then bring her back in for this one episode where she's just kind of hanging all over Luca. And then he's like, actually, I think I'd rather go hang out with this other person instead. And she's like, okay. And then we never see her again. So,
because I wonder if they know they're going to go back to Africa at this point. Mm. Yet.
Well, they will. Yeah. And I think they do know that in some way, but I don't think they know how and in what way and, you know, all that stuff. So, and I don't know if Jillian factors into those plans because she will not be there when they go back to.
Oh, yeah. Obviously, we're saying goodbye
right,
to her here.
Yeah, Jillian will not be part of Africa Part 2 Electric Boogaloo when we get there in season. Is it next season or is it season 12?
I think it's 12.
No, it is 12. It is 12 because it's after. Or it might even be 13, actually, now that I think about it, because it's after Carter's gone. So it's a Carter guest arc. But anyway, we'll get there when we get there. Jillian won't be part of that. So.
Yeah, much more Mary McCormick heavy that time around. All right, moving on to, I guess, another pretty definitive goodbye to Sandy, because the gays can't have nice things.
Oof.
It's me, I'm the gays.
One of the more egregious examples this season, but not the only one, of underdeveloped backstories and background characters and background storylines, and like it was really eye-opening to see how little of Sandy and Carrie's story, like the lead up to the tragedy
at all,
we are exposed to. Her, like her entire pregnancy, Sandy's entire pregnancy is summed up in a previously on. The whole ass thing, like the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
We go from Carrie has a miscarriage, and Sandy doesn't want to have a baby any, like doesn't want to be the one to carry it, to
she's at the NICU.
She's having a baby, and then three episodes later, she's dead. Like there is no like build to this. There is no like, hey, let's check in on them every once in a while. Nope, it is all summed up in a previous
cheap unnecessary drama.
Yeah, it was. Disappointing, I think, was the word I kept coming back to. It's just disappointing. I would have liked to have seen them do so much more.
Damn, that's who I should have nominated for least favorite character. Homophobic shitbag grandma.
I did think about that, but I thought that was, even by my standards, too out there. Though I did almost nominate the helicopter, too, so I can't.
Lauren deciding which... Is it going to be an old...
Unhinged.
An old woman, a child... Or or an inanimate object for worst character.
All three would have been fine.
Yeah. All right. Moving on, also in episode 18, but this one comes with an asterisk, we lose Gallant as a main cast member.
Yes.
So I personally don't think he should be on here, but
well, I mean, it's more about marking the mile marker here, because we are losing him as a main cast member, but... He will be returning as a guest star a few times over the next two seasons, I think, because I think the final goodbye for Gallant is in season 12, I want to say. And yeah, again, just disappointing. Like, they don't really do anything with Gallant until right as he's got one foot out the door. And even then, it's kind of unsatisfying, and it's a missed opportunity in a big, big way, especially since they're not really going to do that much of interest with him while he's on his, like, half-in, half-out status. You know, I think I said, I can't remember if it was last wrap-up or if it was during the season, but at one point I said Gallant was kind of the utility player, you know? He's the he's the Tim Robbins of this cast, you know, and he's the guy that you can plug into anything. And it makes sense. And I think it's easy to overlook people like that, and it's easy to not realize what you have until it's gone. And I think that's what we're going to start seeing a little bit of in season 11, even though, you know, we have some replacements on the way. But, you know, you're not going to realize that when you don't have that utility guy that you can just plug into any storyline and it makes sense, some of the stories start to suffer because of that. Even though he never got stuff that was like purely for him storyline wise, just another missed opportunity.
Yeah. Did enjoy what we had of him though. Speaking of people who got too little and got the shaft, our final cast member that we said goodbye to Lester in episode 21.
I'm kind of bummed about that.
I am too.
I know. I really am too.
Who is Lester?
I am too. Lester was the
weird med
the weird
student.
Doctor who talks like this.
Yeah, the one that you put the picture
guy,
in the group chat.
That guy where if he's your doctor, you're dead.
But he was actually pretty smart. Like, he had some moments, but he actually seemed pretty good. You just would want maybe think you were dead because he was so freaking weird.
Right. Such.
And he would always, and whenever you get a weird case, he would always be, instead of like, ah, he'd be like, cool.
Right. Such a sight.
He's going to be Dr. House, but happy.
Yeah, he does sort of feel like he would fit better in the House universe than than in this one.
He would have been one of the people competing to be like part of the Fellowship after the three main ones leave.
Yeah, yeah, like a latter-day House character. But yeah, like I really liked what we got of Lester. Again, I feel like I'm a broken record, but I wish we'd gotten more. And I went back and forth on whether or not Lester would be a goodbye or a Bob, because the way we say air quotes goodbye to Lester is that his name gets announced at graduation and then he's never seen again.
But I mean, with that, you can at least surmise that maybe he matched.
Exactly.
Else.
Yeah. Like the natural progression, the natural progression of med students, like not everybody's going to match to County. That would be a little bit too convenient. So I give them points for that. But yeah, I like when they have these med student characters that are just weird little guys, like just weird background people that are, you know, you don't need them to have storylines. You don't need them to have big, rich backstories. They're just these like almost sight gags that just pop up from time to time and have something that makes them kind of unique and memorable. Because you look at Lester and he's a character that is instantly recognizable and instantly memorable, but I defy you to remember a single goddamn thing that he did on the show, like, of substance. He didn't do anything, but yet you remember him because he was the big gangly guy with, like, kind of the Dr. Frankenstein.
I think he and Archie, like, throw up in the middle of the ER next to a patient or some shit. I hate them. Yep. I hate them both.
Oh, I can't wait for you how you think about Archie as time goes on. I know. I'll be very curious.
The Archie Morris redemption.
Come back to us at the season 12 wrap up and
or even just season 11.
Danny knows. I'm going to be ingrained in my position and it's only going to get worse from here.
Yeah, we know.
His opinions don't get better over time. But yeah, I'm very, very much looking forward to the Archie Morris redemption arc. And I say that as the one who nominated him for worst or least favorite character this season.
We've had that happen before. Right. People can just have a shitty season, but overall good arc.
I can absolutely recognize his inherent shittiness in the vacuum that is season 10, but he will get better. And it's by the end of the show, like, Where you start with him in season 10, you're like, fuck this guy. Like, I wish he had died in Freefall. And then by season 15, you're like, I would die for him. Like, don't touch him. Like, I will murder you.
He kind of becomes our Dr. Green. Like, everybody says, oh, he's Carter. Ooh. But to me, he almost becomes Mark.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, I could...
We'll get there,
I could see a little bit of that, yeah.
For half a second, I already thought we were talking about Lester, and I was like, wait a minute.
I
woke up an hour ago.
No one has that much to say about Lester. Lester is, unfortunately, an inherently forgettable character.
Yeah. Speaking of forgettable characters, let's go into who the characters who got Bob.
Only took 10 full seasons for us to get these segues down. Yes, characters.
ow.
Characters who got Bobbed. We start off with a... opposite of a bang, with season 10, episode 4, with Abby's ex-husband, Richard Lockhart, where she knocks on his door and talks to him for a minute, and then that's it. Like, we'll just not be seeing him.
He's got his own life, man.
He's got his own life and his own problems, you know. So, which, he's not really essential to Abby's story anymore, because, like, his whole part to play in that was
money
and paying for her med school stuff, and so... You know, that's all kind of wrapped up in a bow by the end of the season. So you don't need him anymore. But we won't be seeing him again. The one that hurts much worse is in that very same episode. We say goodbye to one of the more colorful and eclectic desk clerks in the history of the show, Randy, who in a particularly egregious example of bobbing,
who sadly got eaten by Frank.
Her last appearance.
Ow.
She's in the background of the scene, mm-hmm. and she's not in focus. Like, she's just in the background, and you never see her.
I don't
feel
like the writers ever knew what they wanted to do with her, if anything.
Nope.
No. Yeah, they got a little desk clerk happy over the years, and I think a lot of that had to do with Abe Benrubi's kind of general ambivalence towards being the guy and only the guy. Like, he would... be like, yeah, I don't think I want to do this anymore for a year or two. And then when the movie roles dried up, then he would come back and be like, hey, let's do more Jerry stuff. So they would do these things where they would be like, let's get a new desk character. And so they brought in Randy. They brought in Anira. They brought in Frank. They brought in the guy, Andrew, the guy that did the impressions. Like, they brought in all these like weird side characters to kind of fill the Jerry gap. And then once Jerry would come back, and Jerry is such a, like, beloved character and such a, you know, no pun intended, such a big character that takes up so much space. He makes this place run. He makes the place run. He's very big. When you have a character like that comes back into the fold, it doesn't leave a lot of space to flesh out these other...
Literally.
Yeah, these other very important, very unimportant, very tertiary side characters that just go missing for long stretches of time.
And especially once you get the power couple of him and Frank.
Yeah, and then they figured out that him and Frank had a very good, you know, kind of Abbott and Costello style chemistry. Like, there was very little room for the Randys of the world after that, unfortunately. But yeah, like Jake said, they never really figured out what they wanted to do with her. She had one of the more interesting and kind of colorful backstories of all the other desk clerk characters.
Oh yeah,
that like she had been married before, and that she'd been to jail, and like she had a her own fashion line. Like, she had all this, like, they would give you these little breadcrumb tidbits of story with her that all were very interesting, but of course you were never going to explore that deeply because that's not what the character is there for. So, you know, the only criticism or the serious criticism I have of Randy is just that she deserved at least a more definitive ending than being out of focus in the background and never mentioned again.
She could have left in solidarity with the nurses or something.
Something, yeah. Just, it was not satisfying at all. But we then skip ahead a little bit to season 10, episode 8. This is Free Fall, if you're keeping score at home. And this is where we lose one Glenn Howerton, a.k.a. Coop.
This is the one that hurts this season.
Yeah, this was one of the more interesting plot threads I think we've covered in 10 seasons. The realization over the first third of season 10 that I think unquestionably and essentially confirmed lightly by Scott Grimes on a recent podcast interview he did, that the plan seemingly was always for Coop to be the one to be the new character that was going to continue on and have an actual growth arc and, you know, maybe not ascend to main cast status, but was at least going to be around for a while. And that Archie was the dispensable med student was kind of what was originally thought out and planned out. And that something happened over that first 8 episodes or so that caused them to flip course and have Archie be the one that sticks around and Coop be the one to just fade into the sunset. And according to Scott Grimes, the plan was that Archie was supposed to also perish in the helicopter accident in Free Fall.
Smoking a joint.
Right. But interestingly, they don't just take that and then move it over to Coop. Coop doesn't get injured, doesn't get killed. He's not involved in the helicopter thing at all. But he still just disappears. Like,
he gets some smoke inhalation.
He gets a little bit of smoke in.
He has a funny helium voice,
right,
for a minute.
He gets a little bit of smoke inhalation. They do some like light wackety schmackety stuff with him. And then he's gone. And, you know, of course, Glenn Howerton goes on to a very successful, very, you know, he made the right move for him going over and doing Always Sunny. But it would have been really interesting to, because, like, remember he, like, him and Pratt have like a budding bromance, which the Archie Pratt dynamic is one of my favorite things about the later third of the show. And to see that the roots of that were rooted in this completely different character who ultimately ends up not mattering is really, is just interesting. It's a really interesting way to, one of the more interesting things that we've looked at in 10 seasons is the Archie Coop converging timelines. Any other thoughts on Coop?
I'm bummed he's gone. It was missed potential, but I'm glad Archie was the one who stayed.
Yeah.
And it's my favorite show, and I want him here.
Fair.
And I've never been able to get any sort of emotional attachment to It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. No matter how many times I watch, I don't care.
I just love the clips of Danny DeVito I see from it.
Every clip I've ever seen of that show, I'm always like, this seems really funny. I should watch more of it. And then I do, and I'm like, I don't want to watch any of this. Like, it just never grabs me.
It's Lizzie with a Seinfeld. She watches some of it, and she goes, Lauren, I don't get it.
Yeah.
And the memes are spectacular.
Yeah, Seinfeld.
Summer of George.
The memes are immaculate. Seinfeld, that's the word I was looking
Seinfeld
for.
Seinfeld meme culture is pretty great.
On point.
But yeah, speaking of other surprising characters that I forgot existed, Michael Pena's cop character, who I'm not even sure if he gets a name. I was more so just annoyed that Michael Pena shows up like almost half a dozen times, and I didn't remember it. Like, Michael Pena was a fucking recurring character, kind of, throughout season 10. He is seen for the last time, though, in season 10, episode 9. Nothing of interest with this character. He's literally background, literally there to provide expositional dialogue. but it's more about the man occupying the flesh suit in this case. That, you know, it's Michael Peña, who goes on to be a big yep. movie star and in the MCU and stuff like that, and he's just here slumming it as a background cop.
See, I choose to believe he made the correct life choice and just decided, I work for a racist organization. I don't want to be a cop
there
anymore.
There it is. Usually you have to go behind the paywall to get that kind of spicy hot content.
Yeah.
Then we go to season 10, episode 10, where we lose Angelique, who is the other side character from the Africa storyline. She was the, like, the secondary doctor in the clinic there. I saw some people kind of go to bat for her as like, I would have liked to have seen more from this character. And, you know, certainly brought a more diverse flavor to that part of the story. And then even more, what's below tertiary? This was my, like, I'm going to...
Quadriary. Yeah,
this was me adding one in just to be a dick and to just, like, flesh out the list a little bit more. Season 10, episode 11, we say goodbye to Emily the maid,
who was worried that she was going to lose her job because of Kem cooking her own
Indeed.
Food. And, oh no!
And it ends up probably because Carter sold the fucking mansion.
Right.
Or put it up for the foundation.
She's part of the Carter family enterprise and gets... summarily booted out the fucking door.
Who knows? She could be like the head housekeeper or something like that for like, and she got promoted. She's now
one
like
of, she's now one of the elite employees.
No, she got she's now like the head of. Is there like a head of maids or something like that?
Assistant to the regional.
It is the housekeeper, at least in Downton Abbey.
Yeah,
groundskeeper Willie.
The head of environmental services at this new reformed, repurposed mansion.
R.I.P. in peace, Emily the maid. We hope you landed on your feet. We hope Carter gave you a good reference. In season 10, episode 15, we say goodbye to Susan's dad, who is pulled out of the Shadow Realm after 9 years since the last time we saw it. 9 years and one reused Barca Lounger joke. I can't believe they recycled a whole joke. Just holes. What are they?
I don't know if I caught this when this aired, but don't they mention her mom like still being alive, or that they have to tell her?
I think
mom
they mentioned that she died.
Didn't her mom
die?
Yeah,
yeah. They mentioned her mom being whole ass dead.
Okay, I couldn't. I got
she,
it reversed.
She has like, died off screen sometime in the intervening 9 years.
9 years
between
and
the
Susan
last time
just
we saw her.
Susan never talks about it or it happened while she was in Arizona.
I mean,
R.I.P. Cookie.
Anybody who watched season 2 and 3 is not mourning Cookie Lewis's death. Like, she was one of the worst side characters, and I think we can all confidently say that we're glad she's gone. But Susan's dad, in the at least the first iteration, you know, way back when, he was a really fun, pleasant, and I just love Paul Dooley. Like, Paul Dooley is just a great character actor. He's a fantastic, oh, hey, it's that guy. And it was just one of the more kind of stark examples of them yanking characters out of the Shadow Realm just to show up and wave, because they literally have him show up. I like to believe that he was just at that bar and they just set up a camera and filmed the scene.
Stop making me laugh.
Because, like, all he does in that scene is watch hockey and, like, kind of grunt. He doesn't really do very much in that scene. And it really doesn't lead to anything productive as far
just
as...
Just his blessing.
Yeah, like he...
His passive-aggressive blessing.
He gives a very passive-aggressive blessing, and then that's the last time we see him. So, shout out to Susan's dad. We hardly knew ye. And then season 10, episode 19, Dave Spencer, who is the blandest of Lizzie's trio of fuckboys from this season.
Aww.
He was the just boring dad.
I liked him.
I did too. I planted my flag when he showed up that I was like, let this just be it.
I was like, what do you mean he's gone? Oh, that was one of the episodes I missed.
Yeah, let this just be Lizzie's goodbye. It'll be much more satisfying than what we actually do with Lizzie next season. So, you know, like, let's just let this be it. Because she seems genuinely at ease, genuinely happy. Like, it might not have the spark and sizzle of, you know, the other two, but, like, it seems no less fulfilling.
He's a dad. He'd be good for Ella.
Right. Right.
All of it.
Yeah. So, but if I remember correctly, he steps onto an elevator with Lizzie after she almost gets caught in between dates and is never seen again. So... R.I.P. in peace, Dave. And then we get to season 10, episode 20, where we say goodbye to Ken, the social worker, played by Daniel Day Kim.
Mm-hmm. Love this guy. Every time he showed up, I was like, I'm in for a good. It's like B.D. Wong in SVU episodes. I'm just, every time he shows up, I'm like, my man. Love this guy
is firmly in the Michael Pena category of just completely forgot this super famous actor was once in this show for 5 seconds. And not just as like a patient, you know, for one episode, but actually played like a recurring character for a handful of episodes.
That's been me. I just finished my West Wing rewatch and there was so many people where I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Just crazy. Crazy to think about. So yeah. And then one of the ones that I was genuinely pleasantly surprised with was season 10, episode 21, Carter's Dad, which, again, I think you could make the argument this is a goodbye rather than a Bob. But, you know, Carter sticks around for a while longer and then makes infrequent appearances. And there could be a reason why his dad might show back up, but just doesn't. And he is in the penultimate episode of season 10, Sadness the Ride, Midnight. Where we actually end on a really solid, really good place with Carter's dad, where he finally is the dad for his son that he hasn't been basically his entire life.
The wasp has its stinger removed.
It works on multiple levels because it's wasp. It's white. You know,
that's the joke.
Yeah. So Carter's dad, I feel compelled to say once again, John Levy, God bless you. You are a master of your craft. Casting this guy as Carter's dad, 10 out of 10, yeah. No notes. Like, this guy looks like Noah Wiley's dad. Like, he looks convincingly like he could be Noah Wiley's dad. And yeah, so a character that made very infrequent appearances over the years was a different kind of train wreck than Carter's mom, you know, like equally messy, but just in different ways. And I'm just glad that, unlike with Carter's mom, where we end that on kind of such a sour note, this one we at least land the plane and we have some kind of like satisfying resolution between Carter and his dad.
I just have to say, how glad are we that Carter's mom wasn't around for the chem story?
Oh boy. Oh boy.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
You're welcome.
Oh, boy. And then same episode, season 10, episode 21, we lose Dr. Lawson.
Hot doctor number two.
Fuck boy, but make it British.
You could have just said fuck boy.
He is vaulted into the Shadow Realm, presumably by the T-1000, Jen Green, after writing a Plan B prescription for 16-year-old Rachel Green. One of the stranger...
Jen just throttles this man for giving her daughter drugs.
One of the strangest detours. Like, if you'd have told me, like, what is the connecting point between Dr. Lawson, Jennifer Green, and, you know, the morning after pill? Like, it's just it's a weird little devil's triangle there.
I would like to take this time to give my sincerest apologies to Mr. Paul Blackthorne, the actor for Dr. Lawson, who... Every time he was on screen this season, I was like, why do they get these American actors to play these? His accent's fucking terrible. He's British. He's, so I would like to apologize on behalf of the STT crew. The opinions of myself do not qualify because I'm only in on these wrap-ups. But Mr. Blackthorne, I really enjoyed you in Arrow when that show was good, which wasn't very long. And then I enjoyed you those few episodes of The Flash when that was good, which also wasn't very long. But yeah, he's very British, guys.
May you continue to get plenty of jobs that Billy Zane is not available. steady work. And then finally, we close out with season 10, episode 22, where we say goodbye to the superior Steve, Steve 1.0, a.k.a. Scary Steve, Cole Hauser, who packs up and heads back to Dallas to pick up his stuff and comes back quite literally a changed man. In a few seasons where he will be replaced by Garrett Dillahunt. Hillbilly Steve, as he's known in the fandom.
When you said Superior Steve, I was like, excuse you, Radiologist Steve.
People don't forget.
I will never forget.
The original Steve. He's still with us in the theme to this day. But yeah, Steve 1.0, I mean, a wholly unpleasant character because that's mm-hmm. what he's supposed to be. But I will say that I still think of, when I think of this character, I think of this version of the character, and I think I prefer this version of the character. No shade to Garrett Dillahunt, but I just don't think he captures the same sort of sinister, just unsettlingness of Cole Hauser in this role. And it was crazy to me to see that he only made 4 appearances because he leaves such an impression.
He has the much more sinister voice down.
Yeah, way more sinister, way more like menacing, and like you could believe that this guy's capable of some scary, scary shit. And
I know they like the especially Frank joked about Alex like killing animals, but like Cole Hauser definitely murdered some animals when he was young.
Well, and that's the other thing, like this guy as Steve, it makes Alex make so much more sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it makes, you know, and it's funny because by the time we get to the next time we see Steve, which is, I think we figured out, the season 12 finale. By the time we get to that, like, Alex is going to change, too. Like,
I was like, when do we get Alex 2.0?
I believe it's the straddle between 12 and 13. So, like, we get Alex 1.0 for the season 12 finale, and then for the season 13 premiere, it is quite literally a different Alex. So, like, maybe this is all just a backdoor pilot where we find out that Steve is a mutant, and he produces mutant offspring, that they're shapeshifters. We get into the super soldier arc of ER, where Adam Baldwin comes in and like it's.
But are you joking though?
No. Yes, I am joking.
We're never gonna. You're just gonna.
You're
have
just
to
gonna
watch
have to
see.
Keep. You're just gonna have to keep doing binge watches 2 days before the wrap up because you refuse to watch them one at a time, and then get upset that the show is decreased in quality. But yeah, that's it for the Bobs. It was, like I said, some of these, as always, there's always a few entries that are kind of wishy-washy, but overall, kind of a mixed bag of Bobs. Certainly Randy, I think, was a disappointment. Coop, Carter's dad, Steve 1.0, like kind of, you know, a mixed bag of goodbyes this season.
Nothing too egregious, though.
No, other than Coop. Coop is pretty egregious. Yep.
Also, again, because this podcast has run my life now, watched West Wing in like maybe a week, and there are so many Bobs on there where I was like, wait, this character's just gone. What the fuck?
So John...
Like Matthew Perry's character just vanishes. He's there for maybe 5 episodes and then is just gone.
Well, Lauren, it's your time to shine.
So Lizzie manages the sticky note for this, so she's got to bring me in because it's on the other laptop.
So would you like me to go run it over to you real quick?
Oh, sure. That's fine. Okay. God, you mean I actually have to use my eyes for a minute?
I know, right?
Lizzie, I'm rocking major disability right now. Come on. I should have had solid food, not just an insure. You can cut that or keep it. I don't care.
Shitty kids list.
Shitty kids. Jesus Christ. Lizzie.
What?
I love how you did this.
She's just going to unfurl a scroll and it's like 300 names.
No, it's even better than that. I don't remember what these were because you guys might have to help remind me on what some of these episodes were. I normally try and put a note on who they were, but we'll see. On 10-3, I have all the kids. I don't remember which one 10-3 was.
10-3 was Dear Abby, if I remember correctly. I'm trying to remember what the thing was with that. Yeah.
For some reason, we've written all the kids, and I don't remember what that
yes,
was.
Yes, Dear Abby is season 10, episode 3, and that's the one where the nurses threaten to walk out. I'm reading, like, the most basic
that's
episode
fine.
Description, and, like, I don't... None of this is, like, ringing a bell. I don't know. All the kids.
Sorry, guys. All the kids. Someone will listen and be like, Lauren, that's awful because blah, blah, blah. And I'll be like, I don't remember what the fuck it was.
She don't
Sorry,
give a shit.
I didn't
fuck
prepare.
Them kids.
10-5, 10-6, 10-7, 10-8, 10-9, 10-11, 10-15, and 10-18 are all Alex.
Great.
Just, again, we've been talking about how, you know, his upbringing, of course, is a part of this. But even with that being said, it's just a lot trademark. So he gets honorary mention for those. I will be much softer on his character once he's gone and we talk about it in retrospective as a whole. But just he's a troubled child. He needs help.
I don't know that he actually leaves. Like, I think, like, because Sam's here through the end. So, like, I think.
Okay, so in retrospective of the series.
Once this podcast is done and we can finally relax a little bit, we'll be very kind on him.
But either way, so he gets honorary mention for those, even though everybody has reminded me that that's not fair. Season 10 was Take No Prisoners, guys. Everything's on fire. And 10-16, we get Brian, who's the kid with the clap, who gives it to two other girls that he's sleeping with on the side.
Excuse me, I wrote down Clap Boy.
No, yeah, Clap Boy, I'm sorry. And he's like, what, 13 years old?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, so he gets that for being irresponsible sexual partner. Don't care I care that he's 13 and having sex, but more than that, I care that he's having unsafe sex and putting other people in danger.
Yeah.
Everybody, practice safe sex.
Clap boy.
Clap boy. And that's it for the shitty kids list, guys. I really want to know why 10-3 had all the children. Listeners.
I'm reading the description.
Notes. Read our notes, yeah, because the notes will be the description.
Okay, I'll go back to the notes.
Probably more illuminating. But while Lizzie's looking for that, is there anything that, I mean, I know we've done a little bit of this along the way, but is there anything anybody wants to say specifically germane to kind of the overall season 10 experience?
Can I just insert a fart noise?
Yeah, I was going to say, you're busy. Like, can you?
I want to say that although everything's been on fire personally for us for season 10, dear God, it was so nice to be kind of back to form after what season 9 was.
Yeah, I'm very.
Like, this felt better.
Right. It felt like a step back in the right direction, even if it may not hold.
And knowing that, again, like we love to say in the early seasons, the pieces are being moved on the board to where they need to be. Like, it feels like there was a lot of moments in there where you saw kind of old school tropes and themes and everything that just felt kind of homey. So I was happy with this season.
I just find it very interesting how Lizzie's ambivalence towards season 10, when it's so clearly an improvement, at least in the first half, over pretty much any episode. It's like you take any episode from season 9 and put it up against any episode in season 10, and it's like, yeah, clearly this is better. Like, it might not stack up with, like, you know, Heyday,
one or two episodes.
It might not stack up with, like, Heyday, prime era, season 5-6, you know, golden days ER, but it's still like miles ahead of the, like, nothing burger that was season 9, that was at times frustratingly bad and at other times was just sort of there. Season 10, the first half, like I said, through Free Fall, it's strong. It is really strong. The soft squishy middle is particularly soft and squishy, and I wish they had stuck the landing harder on the last handful of episodes. There's nothing egregiously bad in there. It's just stuff that is like, it's trauma porny for the sake of trauma porn, and it is they leave a lot to be desired, and the finale is so like ho-hum. Like, other than the cliffhanger, the finale is just kind of there, and I wish there was a more definitive kind of like build to get you excited for next season. But yeah, Jake, what's your thoughts?
I know it'll be a big surprise to the listeners how much, because considering how much I shit on this show and have for like the last three wrap-ups, but I like genuinely enjoyed this season. I was watching this show and I was like, you mean I actually like this show? Crazy. It, like, quality was really, really good up until the helicopter. I hated that episode.
But you're glad Romano's gone.
I'm glad Romano's gone. If they're not going to do anything with him, great. But I enjoyed almost everything. There's a few bits and storylines I didn't really like. Like, I liked the Africa episodes. I love Kim. Like, I loved all of that. The season finale is like whack, but it's like a modern day like Disney thing where it's like, go watch the next thing. It's like, it's not really like an ending, but anyways,
You guys are going to laugh at this, but I have to watch the season finale when I got my head on right. I may or may not have watched it yet.
It's fine. I mean, yeah, but like as like dumpster fire as seasons, what, 8 and 9. And I think I really liked 7.
Yeah, eight
was a dumpster fire.
Eight
sir?
And nine were very divisive. Yeah. In,
guys,
well,
like
nine,
I'm ready to move past eight. Mark Green. I'm ready to move past Carter and Abby. I'm ready to move past the love triangle with Kovac. Like, I want to move forward. Let's get past this. I want to burn it all down. Like, I'm
season 11.
Great. I was gonna say, you
I
more
love
or less
that.
Have.
I really hated Frank this yeah. season. I really you're, hate redhead boy. Like, I just. I'm ready to move on, and that's what the season gave me, and it, like, it reinvigorated the love of the, like, ensemble. Like, you saw them bring characters back and start doing stuff with it. Like, Sandy and all that, like, all that was great. I didn't like what happened to her, obviously, but, like, they start reinvesting in the ensemble, and that's what this really needed, because this show was sucking my soul out for, like, two seasons, and I'm just ready to move the fuck on.
Now, Jake, imagine having to talk about it every week.
No. And I get that. And I get lucky that I can, like, binge it in, like, 2 weeks or whatever, and then come on, shoot the shit, and then I can go back and play Baldur's Gate 3. I get that. But so, I just...
I want to...
It was...
Someone take that game away from this man.
It's a bit of a soul-sucking at times. And so, like, I was just so ready to move on past all of that. And so that's what this season gave me, and it gave me new toys to play with, and that was really great. And, yeah, I'm probably not going to start season 11 immediately, but
neither
months.
Are we.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't hate this season. I really enjoyed it for the most part.
So I want to say this. We're going to talk about this more behind the paywall, but I want to give, you know, our free feed listeners a little treat with this to make you real hungry for next season's wrap up in 8 months, whenever, 10 years. Jake,
time
I
has
am
no meaning.
I am very curious to hear how you're going to react to some of our new characters next season. There is one in particular that I think it's Daniel and I don't hate. No, Daniel.
Is this Dr. Hare?
I can't remember which two of... No, not Dr. Hare. I love Dr. Hare. I don't care what anybody else says about Dr. Hare. Dr. DeBanco is my man. No, this is Ray. So I can't remember out of the three
of
us. I know I'm one of them who's neutral.
Yeah,
spiky-headed dickbag. I'm just very curious to hear your thoughts on him.
It's like if you took Malucci and injected him with some 41 symbiote serum. Like, that's Ray. That's
great.
I cannot wait. I cannot wait. So I just wanted to say that. Like, yeah, season 10 is great because it really pushes us past a lot of the things with season 9 that we were done with. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited for 11. I'm going to leave it there. The rest we'll talk about behind the paywall, but I just wanted to put that little teaser in. Lizzie, did we find 10-3?
Yeah, and the best I can tell is I think it's the episode where, like, there's a bunch of kids. Like, Romano just gets the hook. And,
all the kids who are, like,
all the kids
staring
that are, like,
staring
at it, being assholes about it. And then Jerry is like, oh, this is human blood.
Oh,
then,
yeah. That was
it's
a good
that
scene.
One. Yep.
That was.
Sorry, go ahead.
That's okay. It sounds like I didn't like season 10 nearly as much as you guys did.
Yeah, yeah. I don't get, because, like, it is it's so much of a, especially, this is all with the caveat of the early third of season 10, is such a return to form. And season 9, we spent so much time just as a group collectively shrugging. Like, we were just like, all right, I guess this is happening.
And see, I feel like I collectively shrugged my way through the final the second two-thirds of this.
But it was still less
season.
Than season 9.
Right. Season 9 is at, like, a 5 or a 6, and it stays that way the whole time. Season 10 is at, like, the first third is at, like, an 8, and then we go down to, like, a 6.5 for the rest of the season, and it's still on balance better than the whole product of season 9.
I also get, Lizzie, part of it is, like I've said 8 times and we've talked about extensively on the lounge, guys, go pay for the lounge so you can hear about this. Life was a dumpster fire for us for the last 2/3 of season 10, which might have colored it a little bit.
Really?
No,
okay.
Honestly.
Okay.
Can I explain myself?
No, absolutely.
Please. As I struggle to form a thought now.
You get it.
Love this. Love my life. The first third, 1 through 8, is good television. I don't like the Africa stuff, but I can understand that it's good prestige television type stuff. I get that. I just don't like it. But the rest of the stuff was excellent. Free Fall is one of my favorite episodes of the entire series. It's definitely one of my biggest comfort rewatch episodes. as silly as it is, I'm a sucker for a good mass casualty episode, and that's one of my favorites. I think it has to do with a lot of like the stuff. Like, I just don't care. It's not that I actively like hate the other two thirds of the season. I just don't care. Actually, I do actively hate some of the season. I actively hate what they do with Sandy. I actively hate that they had to kill Carter and Kem's kid. I actively hate the whole custody battle. There's just so, I feel like there was just so much unnecessary garbage in the back two thirds. Like, I think the whole stuff with Steve was kind of half baked. I think it definitely needed to be fleshed out past more than the end of this season. I mean, it will eventually, but like,
they do put a pause in it for
a pretty big pause in it. Yeah. So we'll come back to that at the end of season 12.
They do struggle in the second two third the latter two thirds of the season is with like foundational groundwork for storylines. Like, I don't necessarily think that the trauma porniness of the end of the season is unjustified. I mean, it is unjustified, you know, by definition, but what I'm saying is that, like, I don't necessarily fault them for doing it, but I do fault them for not doing the required work to make it make sense and make it be justified and make it mean something, because they really do just kind of pull stuff out of left field and go like, hey, remember this character we haven't showed you for a year? She's dead now.
Yeah.
Like, it's,
we absolutely could have made Sandy's death much more meaningful if we had actually paid attention to, or
showed her on screen,
that pregnancy, showed more of that family life and the bond between her and Carrie, which we don't get enough of at all in the entire
I maintain too that the Sandy's family heel turn, I was, you know, given some pushback from that from some of the listeners in the discussion about those episodes, but like, I maintain that the heel turn from Sandy's family is not telegraphed at all. Like, there's totally just normal communication between Sandy's mother and Carrie before Sandy dies, and then the second Sandy's dead, she's still smoking, and fucking Sandy's mom is like, actually, I'm a homophobe now. Like, there's just no justification for it. It comes out of nowhere.
Actually, this woman who my daughter decided to have a child with actually doesn't get to be a parent at all because I'm a bigot. Look at me go.
The foundational work just isn't there for a lot of those storylines.
Yeah. It feels like they take a lot of like swings that just either miss entirely, or it's like you're playing T-ball and you hit a home run. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's just not, you did the thing, but did you really do the thing? And did you really...
The removal or the diminishment of Kem's agency the second she's out of Africa is particularly frustrating. Like, we introduced this character who's very, you know, strong-willed, very opinionated, very, you know, self-sufficient. And then they bring her to Chicago, and she's just like, wow, this is like, what,
she feels like two different characters.
She feels like two different characters.
Go watch.
Is this a French fry?
Like, go watch her in Westworld and feel better about Tandaway Newton.
Yeah, and then.
Or go watch The Chronicles of Riddick.
Even though Westworld is. Pretty bad. Go watch
Elizabeth.
Solo.
You didn't watch Westworld as obsessively as I did.
I hear. Two seasons, like three and four. Is she even in season three and four?
I don't know. I stopped after two. But still, her arc. But I'm saying her arc for those first two seasons is like an empowerment arc.
No, I wasn't dissing. I wasn't dissing her because I've seen bits and pieces of the first season.
She's a badass.
You did not just present Solo as a better quality alternative to any piece of media ever created by human beings.
Excuse you.
It's actually
that movie.
Guys, we can't turn this into a Star Wars podcast. Right. We're an hour in. We've already barely got Lauren on here. Like, let's
Lauren.
Not.
Lauren will literally dissipate into a pile of dust.
My non-existent stomach ulcer will rupture if we have to do a Star Wars list right now, guys.
But yeah, so like, I
Solo's a good movie. Go watch it.
Elizabeth.
I definitely agree with Lizzie about many things non-Star Wars related that the foundational work for some of those storylines in the second two-thirds of the season are lacking. Like, they could definitely do better with that. I think still that the execution of some of those moments is done well enough that I give it a passing grade, you know? Like, I think we talked about during Midnight, and we talked about during Sandy's goodbye episode. Like, those are traumatic moments, and they're trauma porny, and like, they may not be particularly pleasant to watch on a rewatch, but they are still well executed, and they are still like, that, like you said, it's a T-ball home run. Like, you didn't do any of the work really to get you there, but you still hit a home run. Like, you still landed the plane, you still did what you needed to do. And so, again, I think on balance for the whole season, I think I would rank 10 in the kind of right middle. Like, it is definitely not on par with your season 5, season 6, like, heydays, or even, in my opinion, I know Jake doesn't love it, but season 8. Like, season 8 is, it's the Empire Strikes Back season. Everything sucks, but it's really good. But it's not as bad as season 9 was. It's not as
I feel like season 4 and season 9 were our two kind
of... Season 4 is kind of a all over the place, but, you know, it still has a really strong cast, so it's I put that in the like, upper middle. Mm-hmm. Season 7 and 9, I think, are the ones that, for me, are like...
That's the one.
I think the other thing that was really frustrating about the season was watching Cordae sputter so
yeah,
much.
That's...
Yeah, I think that's the other thing, too. It's like... One of my favorite characters in the entire series.
Circle in the drain.
I forgot just how bad her
downfall loses her drive.
There was so much this season.
Not her sex
there
drive.
There was so much this season of us going contractually obligated Lizzie Corday appearance.
Yeah, like, I was the one who started putting that in the notes.
There could have been so much with like her and Shirley running the surgery floor because Romano's gone. Because wasn't she like...
She was offered the job. Yeah, well, she was offered the job. We never actually got confirmation whether she took that job.
So, like,
or
there could have been a whole arc up there, like, in obviously in passing because it's ER, not surgery. But there could have been a whole sub arc every once in a while of her being like, "Fuck, I don't know how to balance this with Ella, with you know, everything." Like, there could have been a way to do this with her, you know, processing Romano's grief as a friend, but also being like, fuck, now I have to clean up this mess.
We got exactly none of that.
Like, she should have been, she was the only one who was remotely upset about Romano dying, and they didn't do anything with
it. No, they really didn't. Yeah, I mean, I think, and we don't usually do it like this, but, like, I think, like, winners this season, unquestionably, I think Abby was a big winner this season. You know, she got a lot of stuff to do. I think Carter, despite some of the stuff that happens to Carter, in terms of just having stuff to do and having, like, having good material to work with, I think Carter was a winner this season. I think Pratt is, you know, is a tier below, but I think was also a winner this season. But I think in terms of losers this season, like people who were just left out in the cold, Corday's got to be up there. Chen's got to be up there because Chen's just not there for like half the season. Like, Chen's just gone. And then Gallant. Like, Chen, Gallant, and Corday are all big, big losers this season of just, like, not given anything to do when they are there, and then a lot of the season they're just not there, and it's very frustrating.
Well, Lauren, what did a couple listeners have to say about this season?
Hold on, gotta put my glasses back
on. If you want to take the first one, I can handle Aaron's, because it's Aaron length.
Okay, that's fair. I will do the first one. Thank you, Daniel. We have @SimplySwooning says, season 10 as a whole is a mixed bag. It has some of my favorite things, like Abby's return to med school, Bob Newhart, and by far the best of the Africa episodes with The Lost. That's the great stuff. The first third of the show is excellent, and then it all starts to kind of go south. I was really hoping that upon rewatch, I might feel differently about Sam and Alex, but I don't. I still kind of don't find these characters necessary. Like, what is their purpose in the entire arc? To remind us that Luca wants a family? That's been the case since day one. I would have loved to have see some of the OG nurses pushed back into the forefront. Or we could have done some real character work with Corday and Chen. I also wouldn't have minded if Romano stuck around. And even as nothing is being done with some established characters, trauma is being dumped by the tons on others. Looking at how heartbroken and grief-stricken Carter is at the end, it's hard to believe he started out this season as a smug, kerosene-conserving crusader. Morris's early days remind me of why I had such a hard time warming up to him, and some of Pratt's nonsense almost tested my love for his character. Neela's arrival is solid, and looking back, the seeds of her quarter-life crisis are actually well-planted. I mean, we're head and shoulders above season 9, where I don't want to throw something at the screen every 3 minutes, but I wish they'd dug deeper into what had been established instead of grasping for new things. Before I forget to mention, Susan's here too, which is actually a microcosm of a lot of what I don't like about it. It's good, definitely better than its immediate predecessor. I think the season as a whole is a 7.5 out of 10, maybe elevated to an 8 by excellent guest stars and some shining moments. I have it ranked about 8th or 9th in my season's ranking for the entire series because it's definitely the star of the 9-11 block. But there is so much more they could have done with the pieces they had. Sorry, I shouldn't have laughed.
Let's rethink that name.
9-11 block.
Calling something the 9-11 block, that is... All right.
Take Aaron's. We'll be here another
hour.
At
the full-time dad. Season 10 represented a solid rebound from the flaming bag of dog shit that was season 9. But as someone has already pointed out, it's an uneven ride. Starting first with the high points. Episodes 1 through 8. The beginning of the season gives you all the feels of a classic ER season. You've got a reset cast dynamic that relies on the collective versus the focus on Carter and Abby. By the way, Carby is finally dead. Did you hear? Susan rises from the dead and gives us some great moments, especially in the arc with Bob Newhart. Speaking of actual resurrections, Luca gives us some classic Croatian brilliance in the penultimate scene of The Lost. Dear Abby and the subsequent episodes give Abby the final push needed to return to med school. We get some new characters in Neela, yay, Sam, yay, and Morris, that will help shape and define the show's third act. And we say goodbye to some of the key fabric of the show's early and middle years, including Romano, whose over-the-top exit gives us a legendary Thanksgiving episode, nurses Yosh, Connie, and Lydia, who get a muted farewell, and Randy, who literally vanishes. And that only gets us one-third of the way through the season. I also love NICU, which gives us a powerhouse performance by both Abby and Neela and helps us learn a great deal more about the budding duo. Forgive and Forget is another personal favorite as it gives us our first real look at Morris, the nexus of the Pratt and Frank friendship, and a motherfucking tank. And finally, Abby's foray into psych and the tragic conclusion of Sandy and Carrie and the subsequent custody battle over Henry and Carter and Kem's tragedy are all very good television. Did I mention a lady sets herself on fire? Holy shit, there's a lot going on. That was this season. Holy fuck. I forgot about that. I forgot about the like self-immolation lady this season.
And I take back everything I said about the end of season 10. It was amazing because of the tank. That's all.
And now for the low points. Carter and Kem's return stateside was poorly constructed and never gives us a ton to work with in terms of their pairing. Kem especially, which is unfortunate as Tandaway Newton does the best she can with such surprisingly flimsy character development. Pratt's sister storyline is an unnecessary detour. We get several stinker episodes, most notably Missing. And then there's the absolute disappearance of Michael Gallant until the moment they ship him off the cast. And of course, there's the ill-fated pairing of Luca and Sam and the addition of the godfather of Lauren's shitty kids list, Alex, into the ER universe. What you're left with on balance is a good but not great season that gives you some old ER feels but also leans into the soapy, shark-jumping direction that will come to define later seasons. ER is at its best when storylines are fully formed, characters are fully developed, and the show balances pulse-pounding action with the slow-burn, long-term character and story development. We're reaching the end of that era, which is definitely a bummer. And yeah, that is, we did talk about that a little bit in the finale episode. I'm sorry, I just saw Chick's face on the camera for a second. We did talk about that on the season finale episode a little bit of the goodbye kind of to the more quaint style of storytelling of early days ER, and more leaning more into the drama aspects of things and building big moments, and how Drive is kind of a marriage of those two things that works to middling effect, but it is definitely like we're saying goodbye to one style of ER and saying hello with our whole STT-ussy to the to the later version of the way that they do things for the rest of the show. So with that being said, I'm going to turn it over to whatever the hell it is Jake is doing over in his little square of the...
Nothing means nothing. Nothing means nothing, man. I'm thinking all the way to the top, yeah. I'm justifiably in a position I'd rather not be in, but the cream will rise to the top. Oh, yeah. You should all feel the honor that I'm taking a break from my 8th run of Baldur's Gate 3 and just for this nonsense. Mekhi Madness. Yeah, he's got more to offer than John Carter MD thinks that I got. Yeah, let me tell you something right now. Cards on the table, stacked against the Macho Man Jake Terrell Esquire and STT Mania 3. And I'll say it, yeah, let me say it out loud. Let me point to the president of the World STT Federation. The Macho Man Jake Terrell Esquire is not happy with the writer's decision to give up on Elizabeth Corday, yeah. And what's up with Gallant the last season and a half? Now I am the cream. In the World STT Federation, and there's no doubt about it, yeah. And you, Mean Gene Anspa, you know that I am the cream of the crop. Yeah, I do, yeah. Outside interference in my moment of glory, yeah. And now I'm living in a nightmare that is season 8 and 9 of ER... And I am the cream. And now not only the helicopter of irony must fall on unsuspecting surgeons, but the world of ER is forever changed. Because Linda Cardellini, yeah. And I am the cream. Oh, the cream of the crop. And there's no one that does it better than the Macho Man, Jake Terrell Esquire. On stream, off stream, it doesn't matter. I'm better than you are, yeah. I'm talking everyone in the World STT Federation. In the Discord, on the Facebook page. You've got Gen T coming at me for dunking on Kovac, and you've got at the full-time dad giving you eloquent soliloquies that are more insightful than this actual podcast. Maybe Aaron and I can start our own show.
He's out of line.
And I'm even talking to the hosts of this here show, yeah. I'm on my way, and there's nothing is going to stop me. Nothing's gonna stop me, because you're gonna go subscribe at patreon.com/settingthetonepod, yeah. You're gonna go to patreon.com/settingthetonepod where you can get extra bonus content from these jamokes, yeah. But more importantly, you're gonna get content from the Macho Man, Jake Terrell Esquire, the cream of the crop. Now, when you go to that URL bar and you're typing in that Patreon link, I want you to think about how mad Lizzie is every time I say the wrong URL and how much she's vibrating in anger right now because she wants to correct me. But I don't see Settling the Tone podcast. And you know just how much the Macho Man doesn't give a damn about it because I... And the cream of the crop, yeah. It's like for the $300 a month tier, the Macho Man is right tier. You can fund my own personal mission to change the URL to patreon.com/settingthetonepod. Because the cream... I know what you're saying. That's outside interference, yeah. Outside interference, yeah. Linda Cardellini, yeah. She's on the outside of the ring and in my dreams. Does she interfere in episodes? Yeah. Nothing. Zero. Pure podcaster. And I've been maligned from the top to the bottom because they say they can't handle the Macho Man, Jake Terrell Esquire, the cream of the crop. Nobody does it better.
I love that you're straddling a real tight line between Macho Man and Godfather. Like you're like right there.
It was bad.
Whatever. Okay.
That was amazing.
I do my best.
The raising of the creamer container was what really got it. That's
I realized
really
while we were recording the first part that I had left it in my refrigerator downstairs, and so I put everything on mute, run down to get it.
You gotta keep that refrigerator.
Commitment to the bit, my guys. And you can commit by subscribing at patreon.com/settingthetonepod and investing in quality content. We're gonna be back in a few months for another round, more shenanigans. Come check it out behind the Patreon tier. Let's get it.
Oh boy. Yeah, now's as good of a time to remind, if you're leaving us on the free feed, first of all, thanks for enduring that. Just quick reminder, if you didn't listen to last week's episode or you didn't listen all the way to the end, we are taking a season break. We will be dropping season 11 starting Thursday, May 9th. So as you're listening to this on April 4th, that means you've got a solid month to enjoy the backlog. And then we will be back on season 11 on Thursday, May 9th. But if you're one of the cool kids and you're sticking around for the Patreon feed, we'll be back in one hot second with the season 10 Tony Awards.
Hey, STT fans, want even more from the Setting the Tone crew?
Si, senorita.
Then head on over to patreon.com/settingthetonepodcast and become a patron today.
You set the tone.
You'll get exclusive access to show notes, season recap episodes, bonus video content.
No, there would have to be more.
As well as audio commentaries from movies starring your favorite ER cast members.
You think we need one more? All right, we'll get one more.
And best of all, you'll be first to gain access to Setting the Tone, The Lounge, the monthly bonus show where you get a peek behind the trauma room curtain and hear the latest and greatest happenings in the lives of the Setting the Tone hosts.
That's it. That's all there is to it.
So what's a problem?
You still here?
For as little as $1 a month, you can help support one of your favorite podcasts and get even more great content. It's enough to make even Benton crack a smile.
When did it start raining?